Welcome to Expedition Self on OM Times Radio with lifelong learner, entrepreneur, and creator of the worlds of Expedition Self, Sam Parado. Sam shares 4 decades of studying, guiding, and teaching how to go inside so we can build an incredibly powerful, dynamic, and validating relationship with the self. Expedition Self is laced with stellar, unexpected insights about what it means to be human. Listen now and ignite your self-development process with Sam Parado.
Well, hello and welcome to Expedition Self. This is a really special evening tonight because we have a special guest. And so you're in for a big treat because I'm trying out a new format, which I'm planning to do once a month. So tonight is the premiere start of that new format. So anyway, what I wanted to say before we actually invite Wanda in to talk with us is that I have noticed a ton that when people are engaging in growth work and they're trying to make sense of it all and figure out how to go inside, they don't really know what it looks like or how to put words on it because they've been really living in their own heads for so long, right? So working out how do you do this is just, it's not the easiest thing. And so it's one of those places where I think there's just a gap between what people are, where they're comfortable and where they're trying to get. So, and of course, in lots of interviews with people, what I notice is there's lots of talk about their accomplishments or some big life moments that have impacted them. But what I think is missing is that I don't hear people talk about things like, this is how I started my process. This is why I started it. You know, these were some of the things I saw about myself and my patterns in my life. I mean, perhaps it happens because there's just really not enough time, really, to slow down and listen to somebody's experience. But I don't know. Another reason is it means that the person who's sharing is really opening up and being vulnerable, right? Now, I do share all of the time about my growth process, but getting to engage about it with someone else who I know is equally invested in their own transformation, well, I think it will help you to get up and under your own life's inner work more fully, for sure. And so that's what we're doing, is we're going to try to talk about the things people don't talk about so that it gives you a way to listen to how to think about your own process. So you can call in during our conversation and ask questions, or just share something that touches you or causes you to feel. And also, if you would like to be a guest on my show and talk about your growth process, all you have to do is write me at hello@expeditionself.com and let me know, and then we'll set up a time to chat online. The one thing before we get started that I want to reiterate is how sacred a person's growth process really is. And there are, there are never enough words or a deep enough connection with what someone's saying to really thoroughly understand the magnitude, right, of their experience. So for this reason, I would ask you to turn off your critic or your judger for this particular hour and instead listen for what she experienced, what it is that's important to her, and why these things took the shape they did, right? Make space for her and for me to really be together and share. You know, you do this, even if you aren't in the same room with us. Your listening has an energy and a power to it, and we're supported when you offer that up, you know, with the most open heart that you can. We normally stop for commercials, and today we're going to stop at the midpoint instead of having 2 stops along the way. So the number you can call in is 800-570-7057. And with that, I would like you to meet Wanda. She has been my friend since our sons were 3 years old. And she's been invested in what it means to be a human being and how to have meaningful relationships and to really be authentic in life forever, long before I ever met her. And of course, she's so much more than those few sentences. So I hope by the end of the evening, you feel as much affection for her as I do. But hold on one second. I gave the wrong phone number. It's 202-570-7057. It's not 800. All right. Okay. So Wanda, welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you for coming and sharing this hour with me.
Well, thank you, Sam. It really is an honor to be here. And as I said earlier, I am so impressed at the work you do on your radio show. And so, yeah, this is very exciting to be present with you and with your guests here this evening.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. I happen to know a little bit about some of the experiences you've had in your life, but one of them is that you got to go to that garden. Is it in Scotland or England when you were in your 20s? Findhorn.
Yes.
Yes. I feel like that's just one of many experiences that have been in your life to explore, you know, kind of the world that we live in, but not from a superficial place for sure. Would you, by chance, just to kind of kick us off, share a little bit about that experience of going to Findhorn and tell the audience what Findhorn is? And I don't even know whether it still exists or not.
Well, you know, I don't know if it still exists, but I have to give a little bit of background. So
sure.
When I was in my teens, in my early teens, both my sister, my younger sister, and my father died of cancer. And at that point in the mid-70s, there was no hospice care at all. And it was really a very painful experience and traumatic for my family, for everyone. And I went to nursing school. And all through nursing school, I was very interested in hospice care. I had read about it. You know, I heard about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and I thought to myself, you know, when I couldn't find any hospices once I graduated from nursing school, I decided that I would go to England and work in a hospice there, since there were not any there was one hospice in the United States at that point, and they were not taking new graduate nurses, and they, you know, it was a very small hospice in Connecticut. And so I, you know, applied for a British nursing license and went off to England thinking that, you know, I would learn about hospice care. And I was able to meet Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and Dame Cicely Saunders, who was one of the founders of the hospice movement. And, you know, it was just an incredible experience. And through that, I ended up going to Findhorn as part of my time there. And the Findhorn was, well, and again, I don't know if it still is in existence, but it was a community of people that felt that there were, you know, higher energies and spiritual influence on the earth and were very formative in communal living and gardening. And one of their claims to fame was the, you know, huge vegetables that they would grow. And, you know, you would be assigned jobs when you would work there, but there was a very spiritual component to all of the work. And so, you know, you meet a group of like-minded people and it's very elevating. And so, yeah, it was quite enjoyable. But I have to tell you a piece of the story that kind of goes along with growth work.
Yeah.
So I wanted to work in a hospice. And as a foreigner, I, you know, I think a lot of nurses wanted to work in hospice that were of, you know, English nationality. And so, you know, I did not get a job in a hospice. The job I ended up taking so that I could stay in England and work, I worked as a community mental health nurse as they were discharging all of their long-stay psychiatric patients from facilities that were very paternalistic out into the community with really no preparation at all. I mean, I was given a suitcase full of Thorazine and Valium and, you know, sent off to Clacton-on Sea. And here I had to manage these newly discharged patients, all with, you know, quite severe diagnoses of mental illness, and, you know, help them adjust to being in this community. And myself being, you know, new to the area, and I just remember having this blue wool cape, a huge bag of medication, and boots because it was raining all the time, and kind of walking door to door. I mean, it was really, it was a tremendous growth experience for me, not one that I would ever plan or anticipate or, you know, but it was really about, you know, all the conditions of life and how important everyone is as a contributor to our world.
Yeah, the other part of that you describe, or as I pictured you in your boots, is the whole idea of being in the unfamiliar and making contact, right, with people that you don't know and experiences that you haven't. You said you were in your teens or your 20s, right, and you're super young and you're a place where you would be feeling all these things while you're also providing the service that you were providing. I can't even imagine what that was like.
Well, you know, it was really overwhelming. I didn't realize it at the time, you know, because healthcare was different there. And plus being out in the community and with individuals that, you know, were so unprepared. I mean, they were kind of like, I don't know if you remember that show, Mork and Mindy, but
I do. Nanu.
Cloistered for so long. You know, some of them 40 years, you know, like all of a sudden they're set free. And not even free because the facilities that they came from, they all had a purpose and a job and a level of responsibility, and they had a community there. Wow. And so then all of a sudden to be put out in a boarding house where the owners of the boarding house were thinking, you know, these would be people that would, you know, come and go and be like their typical summertime visitors, when in fact these people had needs that they were not prepared to meet. And so it was quite an enlightening and exhausting experience for me.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Well, I actually want to just say to our audience, I think if that story just in and of itself kind of talks about, Wanda, your own commitment to healing of others as well as yourself, right? And it started very, very young. And it was, I guess, maybe the way you would say it, part of it was ignited because of your own losses in your family.
Absolutely.
And so that's one of the things I just would want to take a moment about is I feel like the growth process, every person in life, some way or another, is put in a position to have experiences that are incredibly painful. And it usually sets up the theme, the thematic growth pattern, right, of their life. And so I guess that would be one of the things I wish I'd like you to talk a little bit about is how did that theme then carry through life for you in terms of some of the other places that you've found yourself where you were dealing either with hospice care or the health system or health of people in your family, like any of those places?
Well, it's a little complicated. And so
I know that's why this is interesting.
Just like most things in life. So I'm going to just start with that. You know, I grew up in a large family of nine siblings, and you know, it was a family where we were very close, but it was, you know, it was a busy household. And my mother had taken in an elderly uncle who, and my mother had a huge heart, and, you know, he was placed in a nursing home, and this was in the 1960s. And I remember we went to visit him in the nursing home. And I remember walking through this nursing home, and I remember the smell of urine being extremely strong. And we went into my uncle's room, and he was in full restraints, in a diaper, like unclothed, aside from this diaper, and clearly medicated, and confused and unshaven. And my mother was just shocked. And so the next thing I know is my mom, you know, said something to my father and then talked to the nurse. And the next day, my uncle was living with us in our house. And wow. So now there were 13 people in our house and we only had two bathrooms.
Wow.
And so, but it was, you know, there was always, I mean, the lovely thing was it was such a lesson for me about humanity and, taking space. And so that, so there's a part of me that, you know, that is just so ingrained. And I feel that that's such an important part of life, of caring for others. But then the other piece in me growing up in that big household with the, you know, so much going on, was that my own needs, I never felt as if I could speak them clearly, my own needs or my own wants, without feeling like I was either taking from someone else or taking time for someone else, or, you know, so I never grew accustomed to listening to my needs. And wow. So I became very skilled at doing tasks and cleaning and fixing and cleaning and fixing and fixing and helping, quote unquote. And so, you know, a big part of my growth work over the years, and I have to say it's been, you know, 50 years. Growth work never ends. So I hate to tell everybody, there's no magic.
I see. Was that a moment of how old am I going to tell people I am?
Right. Well, I'll tell you I'm 63, but it is, it never ends. But in a way that's so delightful and enlivening to know that you can always be learning and always growing.
Sure.
But that
I have a question. When you talk about that being in that space, that it was hard to actually have a voice, did your family actually glorify being selfless and helpful?
My mom, definitely. Yes. And I would say my dad, too. Yeah, I think that was just part of how we grew up. I didn't think of that as a whole, but yes.
Yeah. It's one of the things I find myself listening to as people talk, and certainly as you were, is, you know, that inside families, there's this culture, and the culture puts emphasis and value on something. And then the individual experience, though, ends up translating the way I think you're going to be talking about it, which was, it's hard to have your own needs, and you then were taught very early about how to take care of everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and the acknowledgement, I think for a long time, I could only get my needs met by explaining away a situation of someone else, that somehow my need kind of got squeezed in there and became validated. And so instead of just being clear with what I needed, it became kind of enmeshed with other things.
Yeah. Is that kind of, let's take a moment there, because I think that's very common, right? So are you saying that what would happen is you'd say, oh, my husband needs to eat dinner and I want to go downtown to pick up my dry cleaning, so therefore I have to get him groceries and I can pick up my dry cleaning too. Is that what we're talking about?
Well, I'll give you here's an example that just happened. And as I said, it's a constant process. So
Of course.
I'm nowhere like fully, you know, finished with my work, and my growth work. And so
are we ever wanted? That's the whole point, right? It's juicy,
that's the whole
juicy
point,
life.
Exactly. We are never finished. And so we just all have to, surrender to that. And so, and then that kind of takes the pressure off.
That's right. So, that's right. So, okay. You're going to give us an example.
Okay. So I needed to go. My husband and I were going to be going out of town, and I had planned to make, you know, I made the plane reservations, and here I had forgotten. My friend was having a baby shower, and I had made these plane reservations for the day of my friend's baby shower. And I came home and I was like, oh my gosh, I felt so sad. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I was really upset. I said to my husband, I'm like, I can't believe it that I made our plane reservations for the date of my, you know, Olga's shower. I said, I am, you know, just shocked. And, you know, my husband wasn't very sympathetic. And so I was left with this feeling of, you know, and it's interesting when it's interesting for me how paralyzed you can become when someone else would say, well, that's a simple problem to solve. But when you're not used to recognizing and acknowledging your own needs and owning your own needs, it does become difficult.
More
and
complex.
So I was really surprised at how stressed and anxious I felt when I said to my husband that evening, I said, I am going to look into changing our plane reservations so that we can leave on Monday, because I really want to go to Olga's shower. It's very important to me. And wow. And so on, you know, Monday, I was able to change the reservation. And here's the funny thing. I saved $300 in the process. So,
oh, that's a reward for finding your needs.
Me that was a good thing to do. That was like a little treat for acknowledging my own needs.
It was like a reward.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I just actually want to take a moment and describe that. So it's so interesting because a lot of times to me, when we're right on our growing edge, we do actually get these rewards. A lot of times, and not always, of course, where all of a sudden it's like we do the thing that's kind of hard or feels like we're going to, because what it really probably looked like, it was going to cost more money and you were going to have to change expectations. And so you get this reward. On the flip side, I think sometimes when we're standing right on our growing edge, part of that growing edge is to present a lot of resistance, good reasons like, oh, it's impractical to change it. People will be upset with me. I really need to be going there anyway. You know, like all the very good things that get in our way of saying, no, this is important to me. I need to create it. I need to do it on my terms. Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I didn't involve my friend at all saying, oh, she'd be so upset if I didn't go, or she would be really hurt if I didn't go. I didn't even go there.
Came right down to your own eye.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, all right. So here's the thing. We're getting close to going on break. I do want to just, that strong eye, right? I think that when I think about it, it gets very confusing because I think a lot of people think the strong eye is like shouting from the mountaintops and being aggressive and dominating and pushy. I will not, and I will do it, you know? But I think the whole work of finding the eye is actually finding it in a place where it's creative and it's proactive and it has almost a somewhat of a neutrality about it, right? Because we get so at peace of saying, no, this is my eye. What's yours, right? You get to have yours, I get to have mine. What do you think of that?
I've had a hard time with the eye.
You mean all that I just said, you're like, oh, no.
Well, I think... you know, I've had one of my growth areas is that owning that eye and being comfortable with it. And it's, you know, over time, I'm getting more so. And I really feel that it is, I think it's a small I, it's not a capital I, because we're all,
Great way to say
it. In it together, supporting each other. Mm-hmm. And when I look around the people in my life that are here, and how every day is an opportunity for me to learn from them, to practice my own growth with them, even though they don't know it. I mean, I'm not telling them that, but it is. But, you know, they are creating opportunities for me to see with new eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I'm so glad you mentioned that, right? That the people don't realize that we're growing with them all the time, like part of the co-created experience. And I actually think for people that, can you hear me? Wanda?
Yes.
Okay. You're still here with?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right. I thought I lost you there for a moment. But what I was going to say is that I feel like when you're in growth work and you're focused on it, you really understand that we're not individuals trucking through life by ourselves, that we're very interconnected, and that every experience is an opportunity to actually reflect back to ourselves and try to understand ourselves more deeply as well. Is that, to me, is kind of what you were talking about. Sound right?
Yes, you said it so much better.
Oh, I don't know. No, it's everybody's words, right? All right. Well, listen, on this note, we're going to go to break. And when we come back, we will continue our exploration of what growth work has felt like for you in your life.
Great.
Okay. I think we're muted.
Okay.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Well, hello. You're back listening to Expedition Self, and we're having everyday conversations with Wanda today. And over break, we also got a call in. So, Pauline, what did you want to offer or add or question, or what would you like to share with us?
Actually, I sort of related to her story about being in a big family and how you get lost in it, and so it sort of. It just, all of a sudden, I'm realizing, oh, that explains why I like my solitude. I like, I never went, only briefly did I learn how to go inside myself when my sister passed away, and I was 12 years old. I started to meditate using a candle, and that really brought me to all these gifts that I had. I had, like, photographic memory. I became a top student based on just doing that. Alone.
Wow.
And you know what? And I forgot about all those. I sort of resist going inside myself. I've been doing all this work for 30 years. Okay. And I never really went there. I mean, for a little while, I learned about incension, which was a concept that I never thought about. I learned this from somebody teaching multidimensionality. And when I started to really dig into that, I also realized I had gifts. Every time I did that, where I went inside myself, I really, really tapped in some fabulous gifts, and I totally keep forgetting about them until now. Especially now, I'm seeing more, I guess, with what's bombarding the planet. It's like, I'm connecting the dots, and I've got nowhere else to go. I keep going outside of myself, learning from others, and getting healing from others. But I have it inside me. Right. And every time I have gone to a healer, they've never done a job that I could have done myself. I sort of like co-created my healing, and it opened up something in the other healer that they never got. They so working with me. So right? It was really interesting that like your show about Expedition Self. It really, I wish I had really dug in deeper, but I think from now on, I'm going inside even deeper now.
Well, that's good. That's really good news to me for sure. I just have one question, Pauline, as you were kind of talking about your own process, is did you start meditating when your sister passed away, when you were 12?
My sister passed away. I didn't know why I did it, but I just was so sad.
Yeah.
I just started staring at the candle, and I never, I rarely ever, I was afraid of fire, but for some reason I was like, I decided to light a candle, and I just stared at that flame.
Wow.
And it sort of brought me to a new zone. I don't know what that did, but it sort of like opened me up, and I didn't really do it again.
Wow.
It opened something in me where I had photographic memory, and whenever I took a test, I knew what the teacher was going to ask, even the most weirdest question. I just knew that was the question that I should study, or whatever, that part of the study. I should study.
Well, that's really, really cool. That's super cool.
So I'd get 100 and 100 and 100, no matter what, I would get 100.
I think that sounds like really a cool gift to have. Anyway, thank you so much for calling and for being touched by Wanda's story about her life. I really appreciate it. And I love hearing that you're wanting to go inside more and more.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye. Well, so Wanda, when Pauline started to share about that, what happened for you?
Well, I thought about... what a traumatic time it is when you lose someone. Mm-hmm. It made me think about my experiences with that and how the depth of the feeling. When you lose someone close to you, it's such a visceral experience that it is a time to really, I think when you can get in touch with your higher self.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know...
It is there to comfort you. Mm-hmm.
Your higher self is there to support you when you go through a loss like that?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I do believe you're never alone, even though you might feel alone. There is that presence with you.
Yeah. Well, and I know you've had so many experiences like that. I'm curious, if you had to like look across your life, and I know we talked about what happened when you were young, but more as an adult, what do you think was the biggest draw or turning point when you got even more intentional about going inside and developing a relationship with your inner, the aspects of you, the inside of you? Like, what do you think was happening?
What was happening
in your life? Yeah. Or what was the event?
What were the events? Well, always what caused me to look inside, I was really struggling with things, whether it was a relationship, it could have been in my work, because of my need to fix things and help, I had high demands of myself and others. And so, I put a lot of stress on myself in the workplace, and I didn't realize at the time, now that I look back, how out of touch I was with the support available to me, and how I felt like I had to do things on my own always. Mm-hmm. And that was I think those experiences were turning points for me. Having to look at relationships in my workplace, look at relationships in my personal life, those were always the drivers. Mm-hmm. And usually it was because I was unhappy in those situations mm-hmm. that caused me to dig deeper, look more at myself, try and understand more about the growth process.
Yeah, I have two thoughts about that. One is that trying part of us that feels like we have to just keep trying harder and harder and bringing more and more. I remember when I was working in businesses and realized that the standard that they were happy with didn't match up to what I thought my standard was for how they should be operating. And I often think when we have these places inside of ourselves that we're trying to heal and fix and make better, that we don't realize that we're shooting for the moon and that we don't actually have to. And I'm thinking that that's kind of what you're describing, is that you realize that there's this high standard and it was making it hard on you while you were striving so much.
I think I focused more on the outcome or the product rather than the process for me, as a growth process.
Yeah. Such a big part. I want to just say this to everyone, right? Is that the minute we are focused on the outcome of something, it really takes us away from watching what's happening inside of ourselves moment by moment. And of course, when we have a lot of painful experiences as we're young, we kind of want to bypass all that, because if we're going to be in touch moment to moment, it's going to connect from the surface all the way back to the beginning of our lives, right? And so I'm curious also about this idea of the relationships then being unhappy. Is the other thing is that I appreciate that you knew, or you would know, hey, this isn't making me happy. But do you think, Wanda, that for a lot of people, not being fully happy just looks like the norm? I mean, do you find when you meet people that they don't realize that they're in some kind of a relationship or experience, that they just say, oh, it's the way it is? And it sounds like you didn't do that. You actually registered that there was some work to be done.
Well, I agree with you. It makes me think of a greeting card I saw the other day, and it read, are we eating or drinking our feelings this evening? I bought the card, but I haven't sent it to anyone.
Well, I don't know who you're going to send that one to, but that's pretty funny.
I don't know, but it made me think of the way, we cope, or you work, you just are, mindlessly working. And I came from a family where we were not used to talking about feelings. No one really talked about feelings when I was growing up. And so with my siblings, I've seen in their relationships with their spouses and children, how challenging it is, and that it's easier to be tasking and fixing. And I can share something. My brother fell at his workplace and suffered a traumatic brain injury, and he has been hospitalized for over a year. He has been, he's permanently disabled and needs assistance, two people to assist him with, moving and getting from bed to a chair. And so it's a significant change, and just happened suddenly. And what I've noticed with my family members is that many of them are unable to settle with the feeling to be with him, with his losses. They're with him. They're present. They will, they go every day to the hospital to see him and be with him, and they've been a tremendous support. But when it comes to being quiet and with him, with his feelings of loss or change, it's very hard for them. They fill the space with busy talk, with lots of food. They're always bringing things from different places for him to try, which is lovely, but when it comes to helping him express his feelings and express what's, you know, sharing some of what's happened to him,
mm-hmm.
they get very uncomfortable. And so, you know, I see that it just, it's hard.
Well, so do you think that the idea of is if I can't be with my feelings, then I might not actually notice that I'm unhappy, or I might not really actually stop and register that I'm starting to feel like an automaton or a robot in my life, or mm-hmm. I'm starting to notice that I'm losing energy, right? That the emotional well is the one that kind of keeps us noticing what's happening. Right. So if we don't have access to it, then we're going to miss it. And sounds like for you, that's one of the things you've been very much in touch with as you've developed throughout your life.
Yes. I think it's important to be present with that and be able to be present for other people.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious if you could describe a practice that you used in your life to start going inside with more intention. What practice would that be? What's one thing that in your daily life you use to bring yourself back to you?
Well, Sam, this, I feel I made the most gains in my growth work when I embarked upon the sessions you had over a year. It was during the pandemic.
Yeah, the master program.
Yes, yes. And, you know, we started with, journaling and drawing and it wasn't, there was a meditation involved with it. And I found during that process that I was dreaming more, that I was definitely hearing from my unconscious self, and that just fed my desire to learn more about what was happening. But it was really the creative process that you introduced me to that mm-hmm. really set me on my way. I, still journal. I can't tell you how many books I have all over, and markers and pens and and I love it, and I don't, and I have no attachment to when I'm drawing it, whatever it is, or coloring. But then when I go back and look at it, say the next day or next week, it is something that is that makes me smile, and I can see the process at work.
Well, I'm so glad you felt like that through that program, because it was, for me to create all that content was such a stretch in my own life, right, to get that far. But the mm-hmm. creativity part, I talk about it all the time on the show, and I think you have touched on that it does so act as a bridge to start to de-emphasize the intellectual part of making life work, getting things done, and it begins to open doorways. And of course, I think also you had a lifetime where you had been focusing on really feelings and thoughts and how to relate to people. So by the time you got there, it's almost like your psyche was ready to go. And I think a lot of times when people first start out doing some of that creative stuff, if the chair they drew doesn't look like a chair, then they're convinced they shouldn't do it. But really, that wasn't the point to begin with, right?
Right, right. Yeah, no, absolutely. You can't, I fortunately didn't have attachment to the whatever it looked like, and that was part of the fun of it for me, because, it was just a joy to be able to, let go. And I was so in my head for so long that mm-hmm. Finally stepping out and, having crayons and a blank piece of paper or markers was just really, it was enlivening.
And do you think that it also connected you to your inner child in a way that maybe she didn't have as much of an opportunity to be seen over your adult life?
Oh, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely.
Oh, I love those absolutely.
On my desk, on my desk right now, which I never would have had when I was, you know, like I never had on my desk before, I should say, but I have a troll, a gerbil, and a gnome.
There we go. That's when we like get the whole self back in the game, right?
That's right. That's my trifecta.
That's awesome.
My A team.
Well, I actually think we need those extra magical, childlike, right, elements of life and beings and, you know, right? Because then we don't feel like we're alone, which is we go all the way back to the beginning of our talk. I would love it if you could maybe draw a connection between growth work and what the practical, like, outcomes are, or why you think it gets a practical outcome. Because I hear people a lot of times say, hey, eventually you got to go do the dishes, or, you know, I don't know why we have to talk about feelings all the time, because you know what, I already know what everybody thinks anyway, and I got to go get it, you know, I got to go to my next day. And so I'm just wondering, in your own life, if you take the moments of growth work that you've done, how do you see them as paying off?
They're energizing.
They're energizing.
So even, you know, I still have to do the dishes, okay?
Yeah,
no matter
is.
How much growth work I do, you know, I'm still going to have to wash the dishes. So that's just reality. But what is important is the feeling of connection when you're able to interact with someone in a way that is sincere and honest, and you open that creative door. And so that is like, it's magical.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I still have my routine, and, you know, I mean, I'm still in the same, you know, pair of, you know, leggings and sweatshirt. But there is something inside of me that feels enlivened by that process. And without it, I think I would feel, I would feel depressed. And, and so even though, you know, there are a lot of things happening in my life that are stressful and struggles, and, but it allows me to connect with, you know, being in touch with that creativity. Because at the end of the day, when everything else is taken away, you know, you could be have your house burned down or have a flood, or, you know, people that you love could be lost to you. But you still have that connection to your creativity, and through that, something could happen.
Mm-hmm. It's like your inner world. I always felt like when you really cultivate this relationship with a self, what happens is you don't realize all the resources that can now be delivered to you, because
right.
There's actually a conduit, right? There's actually I talk about bridges all the time, but an actual roadway, right? That the other aspects of being alive and human all of a sudden now can make their way into your space at times when you're stressed or in need.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And so I had one other thought that I was thinking about when you were saying, I think that the reason everyone does growth work is different. So for me, I had two things, is that I can't stand feeling confused. So what growth work has done for me over my life is it helps me be less and less confused about why someone's reacting the way they are, or why something didn't work the way I thought it was going to work. And so when I'm less confused, it allows me then to have this freedom where I'm less insecure about what's going to happen to me, right? Or how things are going to go. And then that when I have that kind of freedom, you say energize, it's really the same. It's just this, I have a deeper breath I can take. I have more room for myself to be, you know, engaged in life and feeling it and having fun in it, you know? So I was interested when you described what you get out of it, because I do think the answer to that is different for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Wanda, was there anything else that as we've talked that you would like to share about growth work or a question I didn't ask that you would want to make sure before you got off the show today you shared?
Well, I wish I knew that, I was going to say the magic process to get people started on their path of, you know, their own growth work. I know it's exciting when it happens. And I've seen people that, you know, and I know people that have started and, you know, but I always wonder, you know, oh, could it be a little easier to get started? But I don't know. Do you know of any magic words or concoction that would, you know, help people take the dip?
Well, I'll tell you, I have thoughts about this because I also, you know, look around the world and sometimes in an arrogant way think, oh, if they would just do growth work. But I will say that I think it's all about how much love someone can let in. Because I feel like the more they feel loved, the more they're willing to take a step into something that's scary, or the more they're willing to stop being defensive. And I, even though we love people a lot, I don't think people, I know me, this is true of me too, that we don't quite let it all in. It doesn't penetrate the heart enough so that what actually lives there is I can trust the world I live in. I can feel like I'm enough. And by getting there, right, you're now on more solid ground. And I think it takes everything to penetrate someone's, you know, the outer crust where they are defended and blocking against letting love in. So that's where
that's
my head's gone.
Well,
thank you, Wanda. I do think when you said, how do we get people started? I just want to say this because I think we all encounter it is that we're working on ourselves and we're wanting, right, to share the world with other people that are going to do that work as well. And I don't know about you, Wanda, but in my world, I do run into people that are like, stop pushing on me to do this. I don't want to, you know, and I'm thinking that you run into that as well. Is that true?
Yes.
Yes, there we go. Y-E-S, yes.
Well, and it's interesting. Some, you know, I've stopped talking about it to, you know, like some people. And I've come to the place where when they're ready or if they're interested, you know, they'll ask and or they'll find a way. And so I feel that living and being present to my own growth work and my own self and hopefully, you know, giving love to those around me will, you know, help them.
To open the door.
Not even help them. Help them is not the right word, but that they'll just,
be
you know,
willing.
Be ready.
Be willing, yeah. Yeah. I think one of the things I have found is that I just work every time I can to be on my own and vulnerable, you know, to risk saying the thing that's true for me about me so that I am pushing my own limits all the time. And that's what I'm committing to really in every single relationship I'm in. And I'm imagining that that's kind of how you found yourself is it's like, as long as you're working on that small eye and working to see what's there and learning in the moment that really at some level that's what puts, you know, the human touch on everything.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That vulnerability is so important. And that was a big growth moment for me was recognizing I didn't have all the answers. I didn't, you know, was just like everybody else, you know, trying to figure it out.
Well, you know what's so interesting about that is we say it, but that there really is a true vulnerability that goes with that, right? We can say it with our heads, but our body feeling that is mm-hmm. really a very risky place, right?
Yes.
Especially because it goes all the way back to the beginning of life where not knowing everything, you know, costs you a lot in terms of your own life experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we are nearing the end of our time. We have about a minute left. And so, Wanda, would you just like to take that minute and share a little bit about what your current focus in life is? I just want to give you a chance to tell people.
Well, sure. Well, I am a nurse and have worked in healthcare for over 40 years. And I've come to the point, and through this creative process, am starting a business, and it's entitled We Bridge the Gaps, as a way to facilitate communication and advocacy for both patients and healthcare providers.
Oh, wow.
So it's very exciting to think about.
And so needed, and so needed.
Yes.
All right. Well, it turned out we had
happy in healthcare.
I think you're right about that. And we're like almost out of time. So thank you so much, Wanda. I appreciate you being on the show. It was awesome to get to talk to you and share your story with everybody else that's listening. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks, Sam.